Welcome to Charity Macha, Nachyomi, with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yechezkel, Perek Zayin, Chapter 7. From the very beginning, when we were first introduced to Yechezkel, we saw that our Navi had an interest in making sure his message would be a palatable one. When Yechezkel is initially silent at God's request that he rebuke the nation, God transitions Yechezkel to an action-oriented role. Yechezkel gives over his message silently. His body does the talking rather than his harsh words. But he has also found another way to soften the message without watering it down, and that is employing the use of language that echoes portions of Torah to convey his message. In the last parak, we notice Yechezkel using whole phrases that were clearly lifted from Tohachal portions of Torah, the rebuke portions of the Torah that delineate the terrible punishments that will befall the nation if they don't heed God's words. We suggested that the use of this language allows Yechezkel to give over the underlying message that the people are deserving of these harsh punishments outlined in the Tohacha. Thus, Yechezkel's message becomes loud and clear, but subtle at the same time. In our parak, Perek Zayin, we will continue to notice Yechezkel using particular language from the Tohacha, as well as other portions of Torah we referenced earlier in the service of demonstrating his point. There is another way in which Yechezkel softens the harsh words of his message, and that is the switching of his audience, so the nation is not the direct target of his words. Presumably, the nation overhears Yechezkel's words, but the words are not directed toward them. They are only bystanders. In the last parak, Yechezkel directs his words to the mountains, the inanimate objects in the vicinity, rather than speaking to the people directly. In Perek Zayin, Hashem told him, "Talk to the mountains on which the nation served idols, and tell those mountains that they will now become home to the bones and corpses of the very people who worship the idols upon them." Because the people are not directly accused, the harsh words of the message become something they can pay attention to. As we begin our parak, we will immediately notice that once again, for the sake of making his message palatable, Yechezkel directs his words to inanimate objects. This time, the audience is the land, Adma Yisrael. Yechezkel is to tell Adma Yisrael, the land of Israel, about the destruction that will befall the land and its nation. Atah ben Adam, kol amar Hashem la'Adma Yisrael. In painful and gory detail, the Navi describes the devastating war that will ensue, as well as the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. But because these painful words are directed toward inanimate objects rather than toward the nation itself, the message they hear is a softer one. As we delve into the first psukim of our parak, let's listen for a milah mancha, which may help give us some insight about the message of our parak. Kates ba arba kanfot haaretz. Kates, the end has come, Baha Kates, on the four corners of the earth. Ata, now, Ha Kates Alayach, the end is upon you. Vishilachti apibach, I'll send my anger upon you. Lushvatatiach kidrachayach, I will judge you as per your ways. Vinatati Alayach at kol tavotayach, pay you back for your abominations. Vilota Hosei Alayach Velochmo, I won't have mercy upon you. Kidrachayach Alayach Eten, I will put payback for your ways upon you, and your abominations will be within you. Then you'll know that I'm God. God says, bad upon bad. Hineba'a is coming. Kates ba. The end has come. Baha Kates. The end has come. Ha Kates alayach. The end has come upon you. Hineba'a. It has come. The alliteration, the use of the word kates in tandem with the word ba, jumps out at us. So let me ask you, where else in Torah was there kates, an end that would come? Ba. Let's think back to the first time we have destruction and annihilation in the Torah in any form at all. It's the story of the Mabul, the great flood. There we see the word kates and ba. When God says, kates kol basar balefanai, I have decided to put an end to all living things that have come. This is the pasuk where we hear that God has decided to destroy the world. Interesting. Is there a link to be made here between our parak and the story of the flood? Possibly. But if the Navi really wants us to make these connections here in our parak, it stands to reason we would see more of this pattern, more words or phrases associated with a flood. Do we? Well, what is another word we associate with a great flood? Let's think about the sin that brought about the Mabul. The psukim there tell us, Kates kol basar balafanai kimala aretz chamas. The sin of chamas, corruption, is used to describe the behavior that is responsible for bringing about the destruction. And sure enough, in our parak, we find this in Pasuk Chav Gimel, V'ha'ir mal'ah chamas. The city is full of chamas, corruption. By using the combination of Kates, Ba, and Hamas, the text seems to be asking us to draw a parallel in our mind's eye between our story and the story of the Great Flood, to equate the two stories in some way. What are we meant to learn from this association? Perhaps the similar language here is meant to teach us that the land is as deserving of destruction as it was at the time of the Mabul. The Hamas is causing the same kind of Kates, destruction, that we saw at the time of the Great Flood. Perhaps, too, by using the word kate so frequently, the Navi is hammering home the point that this end is an end to all ends, so to say. The alliteration even works in translation. Let's continue in our parak and learn more about the kates that will befall the nation at the time of Yechezkel. How imminent is this kate's destruction, the end? In Pasuk Zion, we learn, Baha'et karov hayom. The day is near. Karov hayom. The destruction is not something theoretical off in the distance. There is a sense of urgency being conveyed here. In the same pasuk, we also learn, Ba'ahat sfirai laich yoshev ha'aretz. Dawn, a new day has come. A new day sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? But the Navi warns that when that new day comes, it will just be a repeat of what you've already seen. It will be a beginning that is nothing more than just more of the end. Atami karov, Eshpoch hamati alayich, v'chiliti apibach, u'shvatetiach kidrachayich. Bekarov, soon, God will pour out his anger on the land and judge it as per its ways. What is this nearing destruction going to be like? The psukim tell us, Hacherv b'chutz v'derev ha'arav b'bayit. Sword on the outside, and pestilence, hunger on the inside. Asher b'sadeh b'cherv yamu. Those in the fields will die of the sword. Vasher ba'ir, those in the city, ra'av v'devar yachlanu, will be eaten by pestilence and hunger. Ufaltu plitehem, the refugees will try to escape. Vayu el harim k'gnonei ha'gayot kulam, they'll all try to flee to the mountains like doves. Ish ba'avono, kol hayadaim tirpena, all hands will become weak. V'chol birkayim telach namayim, all knees will just turn into water, will just go flat. V'chagru sakim, v'chistau tampal etzut, v'al kol panim busha, they'll be covered with embarrassment. V'chol roshehem korcha, there'll be baldness among them. Kaspam b'chutzot yeshlichu, they'll throw their money to the streets. U'zahavam l'didayiya, their gold will be far from them. They'll throw it. Kaspam uzahavan lo yuchal la'atzilam b'yom evrat Hashem. Why? Because their gold and silver will not be able to help them on the day of God's anger. Nafsham lo yusabeyu u'me'ehem lo yimalehu. They won't be full. They'll be hungry. U'me'ehem, they won't be able to fill their insides. If you listen to this language carefully, you'll discern here some echoes of the symbols Yechezkel was asked to perform in earlier Prakim. Remember those three sections of hair that represented the ways the people of Yerushalayim would be destroyed? Here we seem to see something of the fulfillment of these words. Asher basadeh b'cherv yamut, those in the fields will die by the sword. V'asher ba'ir b'devar yochlenu, those in the city will die of pestilence and hunger. Ufaltu plitehem, only a portion will escape. And remember the hair that Yechezkel was told to shave from his head and beard? Maybe on some level it was meant to foreshadow what we are seeing here in Perek Zion. U'v'chol roshehem korcha, the people tearing their hair out in pain and mourning. Finally, remember when Yechezkel was told to fill his insides through eating the Megillah? U'me'echa timaleh? Maybe that too was meant to foreshadow what we are seeing here in Perek Zion. For here, the same language is used to describe the hunger that will afflict the nation. U'me'ehem lo yimaleu, the people will eat, yet their insides will not be full. Getting back to the psukim of Perek Zion, the psukim of the chapter then go on to tell of the fate of the Beit HaMikdash. It is described as Tzvi Edyo, the glory of God. Because the people placed their abominable idols, Salmeito Avotam, in the Mikdash will become a Nidah, a distant place. God will allow Zarim, strangers, to loot and desecrate his holy place, the place where he, in the form of the Shekhinah, was tzafun, tucked in securely, so to say, among the people. Because of the Hamas the people commit, the city will be deserving of death. God will bring strangers to inherit the homes of the people and into the Mikdash, the home of God's Shekhinah. The destruction, described with the unusual word kifada, will be all-encompassing. The people won't be able to catch their breath. Shmua al shmua tavo, one piece of bad news on top of the other at the time of the destruction. The people will finally wake up and seek out their leaders, Bikshu Chazon Va'ayin. They will try to find a Navi to direct them, but it will be too late. There will be no one left. The Kohanim will not be able to teach them. The Zkenim, along with their wisdom, will be gone too. Perhaps a reference to the Choresh and Mosgir, who have already been exiled. The parak ends with the words, V'yadu ki ani Hashem. Through all this, they will know that I am God. I'd like to focus with you on a strange image in our parak, a staff that curiously starts to blossom. Here is the pasuk. Tzatz ha-mateh parach ha-zadon. The stick, the rod, or the staff, has sprouted. It has blossomed. Sounds like a nice thing for a staff to sprout miraculously. New life coming from an inanimate object. But here, the sprouting and blossoming actually has nothing to do with anything life-giving. What is sprouting and blossoming here is actually the zadon, the destruction. Almost as though the blossoming fruit ultimately becomes an instrument of destruction. This notion of a sprouting staff or rod, that's definitely unusual. But there actually is another time in Torah where we have a sprouting mateh. We recognize this imagery from Parsha Korach in Sefer Bamidbar. Korach and his cohort, of course, threatened the leadership of Moshe and were swallowed up by the earth. Most of us remember that, but the less familiar part of the story is the epilogue. In the aftermath of the death of Korach and his men, a divine plague ensues and seems to be spreading outward in the camp. Aaron, though, saves the day. He puts his life at risk and rushes out, standing between the living and the dead. He basically stands in the way of death in an attempt to stop this magefa, and he succeeds. The magefa stops. Immediately afterwards, God instructs Moshe to have the nation place 12 matot in Ohel Moed in the temple. The next day, the matev Aaron has miraculously blossomed. V'hine parach mate Aaron levet levi, v'yetzei parach, v'yetzei tzitz, v'yigmol gmalim. Look at those words from Parsha Korach from that staff, tzatz and parach. They are so similar to those in our parak in Yecheskel. Aaron's mateh blossoms, hine parach mateh Aaron, v'yatzei tzitz, and begins to grow flowers. What is the fate of Aaron's rod? God tells Moshe to place it in the Ol Ha'idud, in the Beit HaMikdash, as an oath, a sign. What is this mateh meant to signify? God tells Moshe that Aaron's mateh is meant to be, of all things, an oat livnei Meri, a sign for b'nei Meri. Meri, we're definitely familiar with that word by now. Meri, of course, is the word used throughout Sefer Yecheskel to describe the rebelliousness of the people. The sense back at Bamidbar in the story of Korach is that seeing this blossoming rod of Aaron will somehow get the people to stop complaining, to stop rebellion. Utachal tlunotam, Veloyamutu, the sprouting stick will somehow save the people from death. Let's take stock for a moment and summarize the connections we have seen so far between the two stories. There is a mateh in both stories. In both stories, the mateh blossoms. In both stories, we have the same language of tzatz and parach. And the Meri connection. Yecheskel speaks to a nation referred to as a Beit Meri, and in Bamidbar, the rod is an oat livnei Meri. What is the broader meaning of the parallel between Yecheskel's Parakzion vision of this blossoming staff and the similar staff back in the times of Korach? To find out, let's look at the purpose of each stick a bit more carefully. The blossom Matev Aaron was meant to quell rebellion. When people would look at this Matev, they would somehow become inspired to do better, and that would save them from death. In fact, this is exactly what happens in the epilogue to the story of Korach. Once the Matev of Aaron is placed in the Aaron, the people don't rebel anymore. But now, let's examine the sprouting stick in Yecheskel. Here, we find a searing contrast. Unlike Aaron's stick, in Yecheskel, The Mate is not a Mate that stops Mary. In Yecheskel, it is too late for this Mate, the blossomy stick, to stop the Mary as our own stick did. The generation has been hardened in its rebellious ways. And so, if it is too late for the stick to act as an oat leaf May Mary, a sign for the rebellious people, the Mate takes on a new function, more appropriate to this time. It goes back to being a regular stick, doing what sticks naturally do. Sticks are used to strike, and our Mate will take on that function. It will cause destruction because it is powerless to quell rebellion. There's a tragedy here. God created Aaron's Mate as something Israel could look at and find their way back to connection with Hashem. But when the people become incorrigible, the staff, with its latent, beautiful opportunity, signified by its lush sprouting leaves, this very staff will become an instrument of din. It will condemn the people who refuse to take its lesson to heart, and it will instead become an instrument of violence. Ultimately, in Yecheskel, the sprouting staff is a symbol of that which will strike Israel. So it is really a symbol of the kingdom of Babel. And the very same Pasuk, Pasuk Yud Aleph, concludes by telling us, Lo mehem velo mehamonam. In other words, the destroying nation doesn't really have an independent power. It is no better than the nation they are destroying. It is just the Mate, the rod of God's wrath. To get this point across powerfully, the verses in connection with the staff do something subtle. They take an ongoing refrain in our Prakim, V'adukini Hashem, you will know that I am God, and they change it just a little bit. Pasuk Tet states, V'yad'u ki ani Hashem makeh, you will know that I am the God who strikes. Meaning, have no illusions here. I, God, am the one who is makeh, handling the stick, and punishing you with it. It may look like it's Nebuchadnezzar who is causing the damage, but in reality, the stick that strikes is puppeteered by God. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander.